From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. In the very young presidency of Donald Trump, last night's speech to a joint session of Congress stood out in a big way. No slashing insults, minimal bombast, plenty of hopes and dreams, and a call for unity. After 40 days of fury, it felt like a relief. So what's he really proposing, and where do the good vibes go? This hour On Point, President Trump's address to Congress. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you on board? Did you see a kinder, gentler Donald Trump? And what's really on the table or coming on immigration, taxes, healthcare, trade? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was the president last night.
A new national pride is sweeping across our nation, and a new surge of optimism is placing impossible dreams firmly within our grasp. What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit.
Optimism, dreams, let's go. We've got a great panel with us today to unpack what the president said last night. Joining me from Washington is John McCormick, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. John McCormick, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be here.
With us from New York is Michelle Goldberg, columnist for Slate. Michelle Goldberg, welcome back to you as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you. And from Chicago, Paul Liznick joins us, political analyst for Chicago's WGN News, host of Politics Tonight on Chicago's CLTV. Paul, great to have you with us from Chicago today. Thanks for joining us.
And Tom, good to be back with you.
John McCormick, who was that guy? I mean, that was a full hour plus with almost none of the American Carnage darkness that we've and you know, fury and slashes on the side that we've come to so associate with Donald Trump. What was the president's mission there last night, and how do you think he filled it?
Well, you know, I mean, this is a president and a person who is, I think, anything but normal. And what we saw last night was a relatively normal, standard issue speech to Congress. I know it wasn't technically a State of the Union, but there was, you know, the standard laundry list of policy issues. There were even some, you know, wild promises about, you know, curing disease and bringing industries roaring back that sort of every president makes. And there were even touching moments and drawing attention to a woman on Rare Diseases Day, another widow. Yep. Whose husband died in a raid in Yemen. So, you know, the question to me is whether or not he can keep this up. I think that this definitely was a big break from, you know, his RNC speech, the convention speech, as well as the inauguration. There was that ugliness and aggressiveness there in those two speeches that was not there last night. And so I just don't know how long he can keep this up. You know, during the campaign, people, his critics were sort of flabbergasted. You know, he could go down to Mexico and you know, not get into a screaming match with the president, and people sort of proclaimed it as a victory, and that sort of was the bar. And I mean, he ended up winning the presidential election by sort of clearing that very low bar. And I think he definitely cleared it last night and cleared an even higher bar.
Well, let's listen to a little more of it while it's there, because it stands out for just how kind of unusual it was in its, as you say, sort of straightforward and familiar kind of presidential address. Here's a little more from last night.
Everything that is broken in our country can be fixed. Every problem can be solved. And every hurting family can find healing and hope. Our citizens deserve this and so much more. So why not join forces and finally get the job done and get it done right?
Healing, hope, unity. Paul Liznick, how did you hear it in Chicago last night?
Well, I think that, listen, Republicans were pleased with the presentation he did. Republican skeptics were pleased. And Democrats, I think the reaction there is to say, let's see what he is actually going to do. I agree. Different tone, a very different President Trump. You could sort of hear the hands of several people like his daughter Ivanka and Jared Kushner in that text. The fact that he opened up, by the way, with the first words out of his mouth addressing the African-American community, addressing the anti-Semitism in the country, which probably should have come up later on in the text, but by having it at the beginning of the text, I think was his out-of-the-box effort to say, I am going to be the president that people expect me to be. The question is what will happen going forward. It is worth noting that Vice President Mike Pence was sent on the tour this morning of all the major networks to speak on behalf of the president. CNN's request for him, CNN reports, was denied. So he also talked about giving up the petty bickering and the fighting. One has to wonder why CNN's request was denied, though it may not mean anything. I just put that out there.
Michelle Goldberg, a kinder, gentler President Trump on display last night. How far does that go?
I mean, I would dispute the premise. I think that probably a lot of people are listening to this broadcast feeling like they're going insane because although Trump was stylistically smoother and maybe, you know, and seemed kind of less unhinged and less like a demagogue, a lot of the substance of what he said was the same old Trump. And that seems to be getting forgotten in this, to me, completely unwarranted narrative that there was some sort of pivot here. I mean, let's remember. So there's been a lot of pressure on Trump, not just to acknowledge this crisis of anti-Semitism, but to actually do something about it. He is the president of the United States. He does have the power to order, for example, a Justice Department investigation. So, he gets it off his plate. He sort of, inoculates himself against criticism at the start of the speech, doesn't actually say he's going to do anything. Instead, he says that he's going to have the Department of Homeland Security open an office devoted to Americans who are victimized by immigrants. Yeah. And, once again, he has a lot of people in the audience who are whose relatives were victimized by undocumented immigrants.
That was kind of a stunner. You could hear gasps in the audience when he brought that voice. He called it victims.
Well, it's not a stunner. He always...
Pardon me.
I mean, this is what he's been talking about. He's been talking about this all along, right? That he wants to kind of create some sort of shaming clearinghouse for the crimes of immigrants, which is, this is a really sick thing.
Who overall commit crimes at a lower rate than American citizens.
Right. And so he's basically kind of creating a government, government office whose sole purpose is to kind of instantiate his own propagandistic campaign against American immigrants. And I just think, again, I feel like the speech was clearly written by somebody with a kind of sunnier disposition, or at least a sunnier style than whoever coined the phrase American carnage from his inaugural address.
Yep.
And, he didn't insult anyone. He didn't talk about the failing New York Times. There were no attacks on actresses or department stores. And if that's the bar for presidential now, then he certainly cleared it. But I think, let's not gaslight the American public into acting as if somehow kind of Trump has turned a corner.
Hey, Michelle, don't gaslight me. We're not saying that the substance is different, but the tone, as you say, was markedly different. And for this president, that's something. I mean, this is a guy with 42% approval rating in the latest Gallup poll, kind of epic low rating for someone so young in his presidency. But Americans heard that last night. And I mean, the polls say for that speech in itself, in the tone, very good numbers coming back, the kind Donald Trump would applaud. But substantially, John McCormick, do you see any change in the president's program here? Michelle does not. I don't think I heard any difference. He didn't say he was changing his program, did he?
No, I mean, I think you did hear same old policies on immigration and, a general defense of protectionism. He didn't get really specific into what that actually means. I mean, the two biggest policy questions, policy issues that are going to be settled in Congress are tax reform and Obamacare repeal and replace. And whether those even happen is a big question right now. And he sort of just gave broad outlines of what he would like to see. He talked about we should make sure that there's some way that people with pre-existing conditions have access, that we should have help people with tax credits and HSAs. Governors should have Medicaid flexibility. There should be medical malpractice reform. Whether you can get 218 Republicans in the House and 50 in the Senate to agree on anything, I think that's a huge question. And Trump didn't really sort of put his foot down and say this is exactly how we're going to do it, sort of settling any of these disagreements. You've got a faction like Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, who are in the Senate, are banding together saying we just sort of want to repeal right now and we'll think about replace later, which in their view probably means just repealing and then doing nothing. And you've got so many other Republicans who think, well, that's just a completely non-starter. I mean, we're going to definitely lose the House and the Senate in 2 or 4 years if we just repeal Obamacare and don't try and fix any of the problems that it created or problems that existed prior to it.
Paul, there have been times in these early days when I wondered if this was a president at risk of being thrown off the horse. His approval ratings were so low and Americans responding, some very favorably, but the great majority so unhappily to the dark, dark tone that he was putting out there that I wonder how long it would last. On the one hand, you've got the policies. On the other hand, you've got to change tone for one night. Does this settle down the polity and lead Americans to give Donald Trump more of a chance to go down his road, wherever that may take us, Paul?
Well, Tom, you put your finger on the issue, and the point is whether Americans want to give him a chance to see whether or not there's some sort of shift or change or don't want to give it to him, they don't have a choice. So he's the president. And so I think
you have people talking about impeachment like on day three in this presidency, you know.
Yeah, but impeachment in a moment where Republicans are controlling the House and the Senate, the Democrats have no power to do anything. So all they can do is speak with a strong voice. All they can do is question what he's doing. That's the job of Charles Schumer. That's the job of Nancy Pelosi. That's hopefully the work of Tom Perez and Keith Ellison, who are going to try and re-energize the Democrats who've just been beaten down so badly in these last few elections. And yet Democrats believe, look, the message they have to send is a very powerful one, a very strong one, and probably represents the tone of what people want in the country. So the bottom line is this president has been playing to his base the entire time. Every analyst in the country has said he's going to shift and pivot, and he never did, and he never and he won't until last night. And I think within a couple of days, we're going to see either there's a Donald Trump who's trying to be more presidential, or the tweets will start again.
Do you have any doubt, Michelle, that he'll be back on familiar form soon?
No. I mean, I think that, look, we all know that he didn't write the speech. And so whatever the powers, and that's not abnormal, right? Presidents always have speech writers. And so whatever the power struggles within his administration, the faction that wants him to sound less unhinged clearly won last night. But the idea that that signals a change in Donald Trump himself is ludicrous.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's big speech to Congress last night, what he said, what it may signal. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Is the president on the right track on health care, infrastructure, immigration, trade, and jobs? Are you with him on his kind of America First theme? Though we didn't use that phrase last night, it's still out there, that he's not here to lead the world. Are you worried that behind the sunnier rhetoric, there's the mean-spirited, impulsive President Trump? John McCormick joins us from the Weekly Standard, Michelle Goldberg from Slate, Paul Lisnick from WGN News in Chicago. Here was the president last night talking about what he said was the table of woe he had inherited.
We've lost more than one-fourth of our manufacturing jobs since NAFTA was approved, and we've lost 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001. Our trade deficit in goods with the world last year was nearly $800 billion. And overseas, we have inherited a series of tragic foreign policy disasters.
Okay, time for little thinking, he said, is over.
The time for small thinking is over. The time for trivial fights is behind us.
And his job, not the world, just the USA.
My job is not to represent the world. My job is to represent the United States of America.
John McCormick, substantially, what did you hear last night on, I mean, you pick it, healthcare, infrastructure. Is there some place where you could say there was something in the tone, something in the inflection or the words used that may indicate this president is putting out a plank to Congress, including his own party, to say, all right, here it is, let's go. Where was the most traction evident last night, or the kind of language that might lead to traction for this president, John?
You know, as I said earlier, I think he made it clear that tax reform and protectionism, getting businesses up and running again, as well as Obamacare repeal and replace, were priorities. But I don't think he offered really any specific guidance. It was very general, very vague. There are real disagreements on these issues. I think there's real disagreements within the administration. I mean, for example, on an issue he highlighted, trade, the loss of manufacturing jobs. You know, there's a big disagreement within his own administration as to whether or not they should pursue a protectionist policy of really ramping up tariffs that could lead to a trade war. I think there are people like Peter Navarro, his trade advisor, who are in support of that. I think there are people like his Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, who know that that's not going to create more jobs, that most of the jobs lost in the manufacturing sector are due to technological changes, not to trade. So I really don't think that there was sort of a specific agenda. There was a laundry list of the handful of things he's done so far, the agenda he wants in the future, but there was really no specific explanation of him weighing in exactly how he wants Congress to go. I think that if Congress can come to some resolution on trade or taxes or health care, he's more than likely to sign whatever can make it out of Congress. But he didn't really give specific guidance or demands, I think.
He talked about gleaming roads and airports and all the rest. Democrats sat on their hands for most of this speech, Michelle Goldberg. But when he talked about infrastructure, there was some applause there. That's hard to say no to. Did you hear something in the president's description of how he would go for that $1 trillion is the number he always uses that would put those gleaming new resources at America's, fingertips?
No, I mean, look, Democrats, under Obama pleaded for more infrastructure spending and obviously believe that it's necessary. But all of the details, and as John said, there were no details last night. In as much as there have been details from the Trump administration about what their infrastructure package would look like, it's mostly a series of giveaways to big private corporations to create things like, privately operated roads. It's really, I think, a non-starter for most Democrats. And so although Democrats, would be willing to, I think, get behind like new high-speed rail programs or, other kind of big new public works programs, that's actually not in – that's not an offer here.
We've got the president talking about his combination of private capital and public money. Here he was talking about infrastructure last night.
To launch our national rebuilding, I will be asking Congress to approve legislation that produces a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure of the United States, financed through both public and private capital, creating millions of new jobs.
Paul Lisnick in Chicago, I think a lot of Americans can look around, see, yes, crumbling roads and highways, and have thought for a long time, why can't we step that up? When you hear that in Chicago, middle of the country, city of big shoulders, you guys know about infrastructure there and the needs there. Do you feel Chicagoans around you seeing that there's a formula here to actually put gleaming roads and highways and airports and all that back in the American landscape?
I think on my own talk show here, the one thing that Democratic representatives will say to me is it's the one area they are willing to work with him, which is infrastructure. Now, the reality of it is that this big infrastructure bill he's talking about has been getting backburnered in places that it's been showing up within Congress. So I don't think you're going to see a Republican Congress pushing that one along. But you have to remember, Tom, the key phrase that has to be addressed here, which is the pay for. And I understand it's a public-private effort, but it still involves public money. So if you're going to pay for it, you are either raising taxes or you are making cuts or you are adding to the deficit. He's clearly not going to raise taxes. He said that. He's probably going to have to add to the deficit and just hope that somehow the jobs in the future business wipe that deficit increase out. Not sure that happens. And the third thing is cuts. And the cuts he's talking about are to the EPA and to other social service agencies and to foreign aid. And Senator Lindsey Graham said yesterday that stuff is a non-starter. It's dead on arrival.
But surely you can feel Americans' hunger to have a shinier, newer, more put together country than we see sometimes these days, Paul.
Yes. I mean, there's no question. People want to go to work. Look, one of the reasons Donald Trump got elected was because people in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin wanted jobs. And so even with the wonderful message Democrats had, they essentially came out of the Obama years saying we're not working in the jobs that we want, even though the unemployment rate overall was going down. And that's what Donald Trump is talking about. New jobs, putting people to work. He talks about the big better jobs, higher paying jobs. That remains to be seen. But at that level, he's speaking to the base who voted for him, and they're the ones who are hopeful.
John McCormick, is there Republican support for this combination of some amount of public monies and then private capital, as Donald Trump puts it, incentives for them to invest in infrastructure? Does that formula have Republican support on Capitol Hill?
Well, it definitely was a hedge from his earlier comment that we should just have $1 trillion in infrastructure, which is exactly what President Obama signed in his stimulus package back in 2009. Mm-hmm. So I think that Republicans are definitely open to charges of hypocrisy. When Obama signed this back in 2009, that was the rise of big government, crony capitalism. But I don't know. I mean, I do think that obviously we've seen a lot of ideological flexibility, a lot of flip-flopping. Trump is not a conservative Republican. I mean, he is a moderate. He's a populist. He's a nationalist. So it just depends, I guess, how this is structured, how many Republicans he can bring along, how many Democrats he can bring along, if any. I don't know. But yeah, this does seem to be something that's put on the back burner so far and is not exactly the top. But I think Republicans, if they could, you know, pass a an extra few $100 billion in infrastructure to get through some other their priorities, they would do that. But you know, it was remarkable for all the talk of spending last night and really little talk of cutting. You know, there was no talk about entitlement reform, nothing like that. There's talk about paid family leave, stuff that Republicans have been skeptical about how we're going to pay for that. And so this is just it's a different kind of Republican.
Different kind, ready to throw out promises of happy life. Here he is talking about paid family leave.
My administration wants to work with members of both parties to make child care accessible and affordable, to help ensure new parents that they have paid family leave.
Hey, it's raining joy. Nicole in Dayton, Ohio. Nicole, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much.
Yeah. What did you hear? What do you think?
Well, I just found it interesting that it seems that he kind of struck a note of President Obama. He was more hope and more change. And it was ironic because he's been railing against Obama for so many years. There's this dichotomy that appeared to me in his attitude where he decided all of a sudden some of the things that Obama's been trying to do are great. Let's do family and medical leave. Let's do some of these infrastructure changes. And so for me, it was just very interesting. You know, if I could close my eyes and hear a little bit different of a voice, I don't know that I would have known it was Trump in some of those areas.
Does it warm you up to this president, or are you skeptical? Are you ready to like give it a shot, or no thanks?
No thanks is kind of where I'm coming from. I'm all about trying to give people second chances, but to be completely frank, I feel like there was 4, 5, and 6 chances given, and
it's only been 40 days.
I know, isn't that bad?
Okay, Nicole, we got it. Let me go to Austin, Texas. Nicole, I appreciate your call. Andrea in Austin, Texas, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, I am really disappointed this morning to meet people that really believe in the speech. For me, President Trump already showed who he is, and we can't forget this month. So my main question is, who write this speech? And how Americans this morning can start to believe in one speech?
Yeah, one speech is one speech, but people listen, and you know, a lot of people are willing to give an ear. Andrea, how about you? What about on the immigration front? What did you think of what you heard from this president?
I don't believe in what he's doing. I believe in human rights. And he already showed what he was doing with the ban for Muslims, that he is not believing in human rights. And he's not going to help the immigrants who are working in this country.
Already
I am from Argentina.
Yeah.
I feel that I am afraid. I have to visit my family. I am really afraid to go because I don't know, even if I am resident, if some morning he woke up and say, okay, this is banned, and you can't come anymore to your life.
Andrea, we've got it. Let's listen to just a little bit of the president last night talking about immigration, saying he wants to change American immigration policy toward what he called a merit-based system, flip it from what he says it's been. Here's the president with Congress.
Our current immigration system costs American taxpayers many billions of dollars a year. Switching away from this current system of lower-skilled immigration and instead adopting a merit-based system, we will have so many more benefits. It will save countless dollars, raise workers' wages, and help struggling families, including immigrant families, enter the middle class. And they will do it quickly. And they will be very, very happy indeed.
It's all about happiness all over indeed. We're looking at the president's speech last night. Michelle Goldberg on immigration. No change here really at all as far as I can make out. But a rosy description of the future that it will create.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that's striking is that if you remember yesterday during the afternoon, there was talk that there might be an actual policy softening in the speech, right? People thought that he might be open to some sort of
path to citizenship.
Compromise. Right, or some sort of compromise on the Dreamers, you know, that there might.
Oh, we lost Michelle there for just a second. John McCormick, there was that talk when he sat down with television news anchors yesterday that there might be some softening of his line on immigration, not apparent last night in the speech. Paul, have I got you in Chicago? Oh, lines down. That's fine. We'll figure it out. John in Portland, Maine. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air. Well, don't have John in Portland, Maine either. That's fine. That's fine. Okay, we've got a couple of computer issues here that we're going to get straightened out here. Let's listen for just a second to the president talking last night about what he sees coming for health care. And he talked about the principles that he said Congress should include in an Obamacare replacement. Here's the president.
We should ensure that Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage and that we have a stable transition for Americans currently enrolled in the health care exchanges. Secondly, we should help Americans purchase their own coverage through the use of tax credits and expanded health savings accounts. But it must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government. Thirdly, we should give our state governors the resources and flexibility they need with Medicaid to make sure no one is left out.
And more on health care. He said he would go after the price of pharmaceuticals. And he would, the president again saying, let's let people buy health insurance across state lines.
We should implement legal reforms that protect patients and doctors from unnecessary costs that drive up the price of insurance and work to bring down the artificially high price of drugs and bring them down immediately. And finally, the time has come to give Americans the freedom to purchase health insurance across state lines.
Paul Lisnick, what about the president on health care last night? Did he sound as though he's on to a message that will resonate onto something that is the beginnings of a plan that he could actually work with the Republican Congress on? A lot of talk about repeal. Then he won. They came into power, and things got kind of sketchy. Did you hear something that looks like a way ahead last night for the GOP on this front?
Well, he did make 5 points about health care in terms of how he wanted it approached. He was more specific about that than almost any other topic. He talked about the importance of keeping pre-existing injury coverage and the condition coverage. That's very critical. But he did talk about sending Medicaid to the states and allowing governors to deal with that. That is not going to be well-received on the states. It also questions the federal funding that will come along with it. So, listen, it's fair enough for Democrats to say Obamacare needs to be fixed, and we've been trying to fix it for the last 6 years with no help from Republicans whatsoever. So for Democrats to now say we're going to be a bit obstructionist about this, because we all know the Republicans can get rid of Obamacare, but they cannot pass a new system without Democratic support. So, you know, the Democrats have to decide whether they are given enough to make them comfortable with just the general guidelines that President Trump gave them, or whether or not they're going to continue to be obstructionist and force Republicans to own any kind of repeal of Obamacare in 2018. That remains to be seen.
Michelle, we saw Paul Ryan at points during the healthcare talk sort of nodding sagely, almost in a pleased way behind the president last night. Was there something, was he thrown a bone by the president there that would help him get something through Congress?
Well, I think that there's been some debate over whether there actually even was going to be an attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare, as the president, as he said, you know, this is more complicated than anybody ever realized, when in fact everybody has been talking about the immense complexity of healthcare reform for as long as healthcare reform has been a political issue. But so there's been some question about whether, you know, Congress was going to pass anything at all, and particularly whether they were going to be willing to repeal Obamacare without an adequate replacement and kind of suffer the wrath of the many Americans who are now faced with losing their health care and showing up at town halls indignant that this minority president is going to strip them of their health care.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's big speech to Congress last night, what he said, what it may signal. John McCormick is with us, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. Michelle Goldberg is here, columnist for Slate. Paul Lisnick is with us from Chicago, political analyst for Chicago's WGN News, host of Politics Tonight there in Chicago. You can join us as well. What do you think? Is there room for some bipartisan progress here? Does one speech change the tenor of the Trump presidency? What do you make of the president's continuing focus on crime by unauthorized immigrants? Did you feel comfortable watching the spotlight on the Navy SEAL's widow last night while the president made his claims of success for that raid in Yemen? Let's go to Gary in Sarasota, Florida. Gary, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Okay. What'd you hear?
Well, I heard a lot of optimism, and it was similar when Reagan took over from Carter. There was just a change in the whole atmosphere just by attitude. And I think last night, I heard Trump, kind of doing the same thing, saying, let's reach across the aisle, work together, let's get the job done. Who cares who gets the credit? And let's move on this thing. And it really gave me a good feeling to be an American again and see that the American dream is alive and well.
Do you think it holds up? I mean, after all, President Reagan came in pretty sunny. Donald Trump came in pretty dark on Inauguration Day. And we've seen the turmoil of this last 30, 40 days, Gary. Does one speech change the glow on this?
Well, I think, we're in some tougher times maybe than when Reagan was around, and I think that maybe Trump needed to be like, a stern grandfather when he came in and then soften up a little bit to kind of, pull everybody together. You need a leader. We need a leader, a strong leader. And he's proven that. Now I think everybody understands, he's in charge, and let's go do this.
Gary, I appreciate your call. John McCormick, I mean, it struck me that, of course, there are always going to be a lot of people in the country that yearn for an optimistic view and yearn for a better life. The president seems to me, looking at these polls this morning, and I don't want to get hung up on one day's polls, but yet, even with this president who's got such low disapproval, people do want to look forward with hope and confidence to the future. And there's some margin that's willing to respond to that even after all the bombs Donald Trump has thrown in his first days in office, John, maybe willing to give him another chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, people have been willing to give him chance after chance after chance. But as we saw during the campaign, I don't really, there's always this idea that maybe he'll pivot once he wins the nomination, or maybe he'll pivot, once he gets to the debates, or once he wins the election, or once he's inaugurated. And so there have been these moments, time after time, where he can sort of maintain some sort of semblance of relative normalcy for maybe a two-month spurt before some huge disastrous fight between, whether it was Heidi Cruz in March, and then he went after the federal judge, the Indiana-born federal judge in California of Hispanic ethnicity. Yep. And then he made it a couple months, and he got into a fight with the Khan family after the DNC, and then we had the meltdown over the Access Hollywood tape in October. But as we saw during the campaign, if he could just kind of keep it together for a couple weeks, which he did finally at the end, it put him right over the top. But he did run far behind standard-issue Republicans. Somebody like Marco Rubio in Florida ran 6 percentage points ahead of him. Rob Portman ran, I don't know, was like 12 or 13 or 14 points ahead of him in Ohio. So I do think that after 8 years of a Democratic presidency, people did just sort of want a switch over to anything else, even if that meant President Trump. I think they would have preferred sort of the population at large would have preferred sort of a standard issue Republican to be that change from Obama. But this is what we've got. I'm very skeptical that he can keep up this new tone for any amount of time. But I will be as shocked as anyone if he can.
People want a bright future. There's skepticism out there as well. Also, people want a hope. But Wanda writes to us. She said, "This is the new low bar. He sounded sane for a change. So what?" Peter writes on our website, if a Democrat had given the same speech last night, Republicans would have jumped all over it saying, "How are you going to pay for it?" All caps. Well, yes, but that's still not clear with this president either. Joe in Melbourne, Florida. Joe, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
For taking the call. Three quick points. I found it unfortunate that The president started out decrying the attacks against the Jewish community, the cemeteries, the destruction, and then later on speaks to starting a bureau essentially called VOICE, Victims of Immigration Crime. All that does to me, it's red meat for the bigots and the xenophobes to continue identifying people that they want to go after, the less stable. I honestly think that, and I'm hopeful that Mr. Kushner and Ivanka Trump had some influence in toning down his rhetoric. That was a positive. But I firmly believe that as long as Mr. Bannon and Mr. Miller are in the Oval Office, I think the hate mongering is going to continue. And thanks for taking the call.
Happy to have your call, Joe. Here was that opening comment last night in the president's speech, and it was notable for its placement and for its directness. Of course, many people had been waiting for it. But here the president was opening his speech to Congress last night.
Recent threats targeting Jewish community centers and vandalism of Jewish cemeteries, as well as last week's shooting in Kansas City, remind us that while we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms.
Michelle Goldberg in New York, there it was, right out front. People had been waiting quite impatiently in many quarters, for the president to speak up about what's been happening with Jewish community centers, with Jewish cemeteries, tons of gravestones toppled, the shooting that we saw in Kansas City, and there it was at the top of the speech. What do you make of that, Michelle?
Well, look, there's been mounting pressure on Trump to do something, not just say something, but do something about a wave of terror that is affecting Jewish communities all over the country. And, you know, ordinarily,
we're talking about bomb threats against many community centers.
Right. Little kids being evacuated
yeah.
day after day, pushed out in strollers, waves of graffiti and desecration. And look, usually condemning the desecration of a Jewish cemetery is not a hard call for an American politician.
Mm-hmm.
And it's astonishing that it took this much time and this much kind of intervening, you know, petulance and foot dragging before Donald Trump was willing to say something. But he did say something, and that is something that people wanted. But they also wanted him to do something. You know, this is the responsibility of the Justice Department to find out what is happening and put an end to it. And I think it's very important to realize that that the Trump administration has already said that it is redirecting resources away from domestic right-wing extremism and to kind of Islamist extremism, even though there is a lot of domestic right-wing terrorism in this country. And so while I think it is a start that he said something, the more important question is, will he do something?
Did you feel
a
tension there?
No sign of that.
Did you feel a tension there, Michelle, as our caller Joe did, between that opening statement and, I mean, you got to be happy to hear it there, even if it may have been late, and then later on going in particular after immigrants, going after the other. I mean, our caller Joe says.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, again, when this shooter in Kansas who gunned down two Indian immigrants thinking that mm-hmm. they were Iranians, when you have an entire government that's dedicated to demonizing immigrants as kind of criminal and other, this is an almost inevitable result. And so I think that his words there ring really hollow. And it's also really striking to me that although he, finally has been willing to condemn anti-Semitic violence and vandalism and threats, we've also seen a number of mosques and Islamic centers vandalized and burned down and people attacked. Mm. And of course, not one word about any of that.
An emotional moment, more than a moment, last night when the president turned to the recent and controversial Navy SEALs raid in January in Yemen that he ordered. Widow of William Ryan Owens, the Navy SEAL operator who died in that raid, was there up in the gallery alongside Ivanka Trump. And the president spoke to it, led to some very sustained applause while she visibly wept with grief. Here was the president.
We are blessed to be joined tonight by Corinne Owens, the widow of U.S. Navy Special Operator, Senior Chief William Ryan Owens. Ryan died as he lived, a warrior and a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation.
And the applause went on and on. More remarks there on the camera, the TV camera lingering for such a long time on a woman who clearly was fully in the grips of grief at the very recent loss of her husband, Ryan Owens. Josh in Austin, Texas. Josh, thank you for calling. You're on there. What did you think of that moment, Josh?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. That moment to me was really disturbing in the sense that, yes, politicians have always used fallen soldiers to kind of bring in a sense of patriotism and honor, and that's fine. But there was something about his tone and something about the sustained clapping and his insistence on continuing to glorify Ryan that felt very manipulative. And honestly, the first thing that it reminded me of is the strategy that extremist groups like ISIS use to get people to give themselves over.
But why not honor a fallen soldier? Why not honor a fallen American soldier, Josh?
Well, it was clear that he was using it in a political way, which, again, isn't anything new. And no. I guess what I'm speaking to is sort of I got kind of the chills, but in a bad way, around his tone and around some of the extent to which he did that.
It become awkward as the focus just stayed on her for such a very long time. I mean, the president himself called it out saying that, you know, Ryan would be looking down as if from heaven, feel good that maybe he'd broken a record for sustained applause in a joint session of Congress with the president speaking. I don't know. Paul Liznick, it was awkward in a way you could hear the president responding through her presence and the story of the death of Special Operator Owens to critics who said this was not an effective raid. And he rolled out a quote from General James Mattis, now Secretary of Defense, saying that it was an important and valuable raid. It got valuable research that will intelligence that will help in the future. What about the political use of that moment last night, Paul? How did it strike you?
Tom, you put your finger on the complexity of that moment. Look, the reason for that very long ovation, certainly deserved to the widow of a fallen soldier, Karen Owens, was because of her reaction. She stood, she looked up. You could see her speaking to her husband saying, "I love you, babe." It was incredibly
emotional.
Just
keeping it together was really hard, and who wouldn't understand that? It's so fresh. It's such a loss.
Absolutely. Now, as your caller Josh was saying, look, the political part of this, I found it very interesting when Trump referred to I just talked to Mattis before I got here, and he said everything was successful. And that's, of course, because there is question about just how successful that mission was, what was gained from it, should it have been pursued, even though it was approved under the Obama administration, but did they do enough to get ready for it?
So Ryan Owens' own dad saying he's not so happy with the way that went down at all.
Exactly right. You know, the overall comment here is that you've got to distinguish between what President Trump says and what he does. And related to the previous conversation you have, just to be brief, but, you know, he talks about protecting the rights of gays and lesbians, and then he takes a step against transgendered. He talks about protecting proper immigrants, and then he has moms of young kids deported. What he says and what he does are two distinctions, and that's why I think it's fair enough to give him points for the tone last night and what he said, but let's watch what he does going forward because there's some real discrepancies in it.
Let's go to Gary in Ankeny, Iowa. Gary, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks, Tom. I'm just a couple things. As far as the Islamic terrorism,
yeah,
I absolutely agree that that is a major problem in our world today. And the other thing is on immigration, I just want to ask you and your listeners and your callers, what part of illegal, undocumented immigrants don't they understand? We have laws in our country. I have no problem with anybody. We're a country of immigrants, but my forefathers before me stood in line and did the right thing and did what it took to become a citizen of the United States. If you're undocumented and you're illegal, aren't you breaking our laws?
I mean, I don't know about yours. My forefathers and mothers kind of scrambled over any way that they could, Gary, but things were a little less put together way back then. I guess part of what people are wondering about is, you know, now we've got a situation here, and if we're talking about sending, I don't know, hundreds of thousands or millions out, is that workable to you, Gary? Is it going to work?
I don't know, sending them out's the answer, but let's get everybody out of the shadows and line them up, and let's start documenting these people. Why are they hiding in the first place? Why are people here for 20 years knowing they're breaking our laws?
Gary, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. I want to get one more from Iowa, if I may, before we go. Dan, our time is short. Dan, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to speak to the tone of the speech and who we saw last night. And basically, to me, that was just the manipulative salesman face of Donald Trump. This is not a guy who's going to change. He's 70 years old. He's he's got narcissistic personality disorder. And those folks typically are fairly good at manipulating, and that's what he's doing. And the thing that everybody needs to keep in mind is there really is only one person in Donald Trump's universe.
What do you say to the American who listened to that speech last night and really wants a better future, wants to hear it, wants to believe, Dan?
I say you really need to get over being so naive that you think you can believe Donald Trump ever when he says anything, because he makes everything up as he goes along, and he'll say anything to get you to do what he wants, because he's the center of this all.
Well, there's the range of reception right there in two calls from Iowa, and I appreciate both. Gary and Dan, thank you for your calls. This story, still very early days. We are, 40 days in now? The president has given a speech to Congress with a different tone. We'll see where it goes from there. Americans want to rise to optimism, but what's really unfolding here, we will be watching. I want to thank all three of my guests today for helping us look at the speech last night. Michelle Goldberg in New York with Slate. Michelle, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
John McCormick in Washington with the Weekly Standard. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you, Tom.
And Paul Lisnick in Chicago at WGN News. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thanks.
On we go. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.